Subscribe right now at johnsavage.com.
If you need whiskey, I'm your man. Whiskey Brother, my lovely friends over there, are doing something great for me, which means they're doing something great for you. If you spend more than 500 Rand on the whiskeybrother.com store and their whiskeys are phenomenal, you will get all your shippings anywhere in the country for free. If you put in the checkout code, what's your poison? No space bars, no apostrophe, just what's your poison? As if you say it like this, what's your poison? And yeah, that's all you need to do. Whiskeybrother.com, not gok.com, .com. Go do it. This is the first time I've done something like this. For this podcast, where I saw a Facebook post from this book Ebony, this guy called Mpumulelo. I just liked the post. He's doing like amazing shit. I just cold Facebook messaged him, said I'd like to have you on my podcast, and got him on. Basically what Book Ebony is this group in Soweto. It's really him, his team. They do Soweto tours, but they also deliver books to libraries that really need them, both combined into one little business thing. And this guy's so cool. He's like very ambitious, very smart, a hustler, innovator, disruptor, trying all these different things, building his little empire. Great energy. I loved meeting him, and it was so random. I mean, it must have been more random for him. So really excited for you to hear this interview with Mpumulelo Mtinso, who is the founder of Book Ebony, which is really a company that you should know about and possibly even support. So welcome to this week's edition. Pumi.
Yes, sir. Hi. How are you, bro?
I'm good, man. I know this is a bit weird. I don't usually just randomly call strangers on my show. Actually, I suppose I do, actually. We don't know each other. I just saw a Facebook post that I thought looked really interesting and felt like I wanted to meet you. So, love to meet you.
Oh, nice to meet you. And yeah, I guess I'm that creative. If it was interesting, that post, then I should be head of marketing of something.
Well, you are, aren't you? You got your own little...
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, let's start with the super important stuff. What are you drinking?
Oh, well, I'm having beer, actually.
Right on.
Windhoek. Yeah, I couldn't get any of the stronger stuff, of the strong poison, but yeah.
I've got some over here. This is an old Putney.
That's a real poison.
Yeah, I'll get you one of these. You know, what's the lockdown kind of stopped the ability to send whiskey to guests and stuff, but I suppose we're back on track. Don't be jealous. We'll get one for you.
So, I'll make sure that enjoy it to the fullest.
What is your normal poison? When everything's as it should be, what do you prefer?
I'm a beers man. Never been into the strong stuff. I tried vodka for a while. I think it was a status thing. I think when Sky Vodka came in, everyone was like, "Yeah, if I'm drinking Sky, you know." But yeah, it didn't work out for me.
Yeah, you got to be tough for that one.
No. It didn't work out for me, so I just stick to beer, and that's it.
Yeah, the cool thing about vodka is it doesn't really taste like anything, so you can mix it with anything. But that's also the bad thing, because I think guys can hide what they're drinking vodka while they're at work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cheers, man. No. Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, bro. Nice to meet you, man.
All right, so tell me the story of Book Ebony. I mean, it just sounds really cool. I mean, I know nothing except for what I've seen on Facebook.
Yeah.
How did you start?
So started in 2016. The bicycle tour company. So a family member saw an opportunity. to have a bicycle tour company. And at the time, I think I had just finished studying marketing at one of the Joburg colleges in Parktown. I was unemployed.
Were you born and bred Soweto?
Born and bred in Soweto many right. years ago. Yeah. moved around. A privilege to also stay in Cuba, in Havana.
What?
Which was amazing. So actually, maybe Havana should be the thing for me.
Okay, let's start. Let's start. Oh, nice. How did you end up there?
Lady, she worked in government. So she is a South African ambassador. So she was deployed to Cuba at some point, and she took me along. She was like, "Dude, me bless you." And she took me along with to Havana. Yeah.
Wow. And I've always did you get, when was this? Was this before it kind of Obama opened it, when it was still sort of vintage Cuba?
When it was still vintage, when Castro was at the seat. I think that's the best Havana will ever be. I don't know. I'm not into politics, but I think that's the best Havana that you'll ever be. Even when we stayed there, none of the American anything was sold in the country. So I was privileged enough to experience the authentic Cuban everything. So from
cars, old buildings.
Oh man, the taxis. They had this car called the Lada. I'm not sure what's it in English. It's that old school classic car. It was a normal taxi for us. And at the time, I mean, look, guy from Soweto all the way to Cuba, it was a hell of a transformation for me. So the cars, yeah, I mean, the only thing I knew was Ikusheshe 325. The BMW, you know, that was my thing. So to see those,
they had no Gusheshes there, though.
Yeah, no. It was, everything was slow.
Cool. And how long were you there for?
Not long, but I think from 2001 till 2004 or 2006. I remember.
You actually lived there for 3 years. You weren't there on holiday.
I don't know, it wasn't a holiday. I lived there. Oh. I had to learn how to speak Spanish. Yeah.
Huh.
So it was for me, it was difficult in a sense of I only learned how to speak English in grade 8. And I think when I moved there, I had to repeat grade 8, obviously. So I had to do English as my second language and Spanish as my first language. So it was like, what am I doing here?
How's your Spanish now?
It's not that bad. I haven't spoken it in like over 5 years. I mean, I do speak with tourists every now and again, but I think the last Spanish tourist I had was like over a year ago.
They must be shocked when the kid from Soweto starts speaking Spanish.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And not just hola, ¿cómo está? Like just having a conversation. Like, whoa, okay, what's the story here? You know, so.
Let me hear some Spanish in a Soweto accent. Let's hear it.
Me llamo Mpumi. Me gusta beer. And sí.
Me gusta whiskey.
Yes, claro.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what I mean, coming from Soweto, ending up in Cuba, what were the big light bulbs, or what were the things that sort of set your life on the path that you're on, that you got from living there?
I think culture, man. For me, the culture, you know, it will forever be a thing, a culture whereby when you move into someone's backyard and then you see how humble they are, and then you kind of compare the two of what the world says and then your experience, and then it's like it's humble. You're like, maybe also I shouldn't be bragging about unnecessary things. You know what I mean? I should just be humble and just live life. So I think those are the things. And how happy they were. You know, I remember doctors were earning close to nothing. They were happy. Like, this is life. This is it. You know, and you sit there like, yo, bro, but you're earning like peanuts, and you this profession that everyone respects and calls for internationally, but they were earning nothing, but they were so peaceful. So that's, for me, that was one of those light bulb moments where you're like, you know what, material things, maybe they're not everything, you know? Just find your peace, man. Find your poison and find your peace.
All right, and this is a wild question, but I obviously know, I've never been to Cuba. But, you know, there's two sides, there's the two kind of political sides to that coin. I know you said not into politics, but there's the sort of communism of like everyone's happy, and then there's the communism of like say something bad and you disappear and people live in fear and basically the government rules with an iron fist. Did you see both of those things?
To be honest, yeah. I'll give you an example. You got prostitutes there, right? Which are basically free to do whatever they want, because people are so disciplined, I guess, because obviously prostitutes, they work with a lot of tourists, right? And then you get government changing the law to say, oh no, prisons are empty. So if you're a prostitute, you're getting arrested. You know what I mean? So people are like, whoa, okay, how are we supposed to feed kids? This is how we make money, blah, blah, blah. It was like one of those things where it was like, how? Just yesterday, this was normal. Today, you got police up and down. And we lived in one of the most cleanest streets in the world called Quinta. So that's the street that the president uses to the airport and back. So that's where all these things happen. So you're like, okay. And they actually listen, because the president's like, yes, no prostitution. And that was it. The streets were clean.
Yeah, because you die. You get murdered if you don't follow the law.
You know what I mean? So that was, I think that's the only iron fist type of ruling that I saw. Anything else really, not really. That wasn't, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, everyone lived kind of like, they survived on peanuts, basically. And because they were happy, so it's difficult to tell whether are they happy because they know that they can't get any more than what they're getting, or maybe they're just pretending to be happy because they're nice people.
Because you can't leave Cuba either, right?
Yeah, no.
As a Cuban.
Yeah, no. They couldn't leave. If you're a Cuban, you're a Cuban. I don't know how people made it out.
She's hectic. Okay, yeah. So this kid from Soweto lands up in Cuba, learns Spanish, watches the prostitutes disappear from the streets. What were you working there?
No, I was studying. I went to the International School of Havana. I think that was the only way for me to learn, because, like I said, I didn't know how to speak English to begin with. And now I'm faced with learning how to speak English and Spanish. So I went to the International School of Havana. So studying, playing football, lots of football. Baseball was one of the sports there, but I liked cricket, so I didn't understand the whole baseball thing.
All right.
So I was like, I don't, it's all good, but I was studying there.
So did the sort of Cuban, the Havana communism basically set the, I'm taking a big leap here, kind of thinking for Bukiboni, because you started as a trader, as a sort of very communistic principle of trade, right?
Yeah.
So you come back to Joburg.
I come back to Joburg. I go to school again, in Dominican Convent School, which is in town next to GP Boys. So I go there. Even there, books practically kick my ass. Football, I'm excelling. You know what I mean? I think there for 2 years, and me and this one friend decided, look, screw this, we want to be soccer players. So teach school, go to a school of excellence without our parents' permissions or any idea of them knowing what we're doing. All they know is that, you know, dropped out, went back to grandma's house. That's it. You know, we'll go to the school of excellence.
Ground soccer training.
Yeah. Continue with the soccer. We try to be the next, I don't know, Spiritual Chabalala 2010, but it doesn't happen. And then the funny part about that, years later, right? Now we're applying for jobs because, I mean, you decided to be a man before your time. So now you're applying for jobs and stuff, and then your CV, they're like, okay, cool. You have a grade 12, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we fill in, yes, grade 12, this and this. They check out your grade 12, they're like, nah, I don't have a grade 12, dude. Wait, what? I have a grade 12. I went here and then, like, find out that school was like a scam football school thing, so they don't recognize it.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Now you're sitting there like...
That's a terrible scam. I mean, that's like a life-ruining scam for some people.
I know, right? But because they were so reliant on the talent, they know everyone that comes there has... so much talent, they go on to play soccer, interviews, how to speak English in interviews, South Africans laugh, and then we move on. As long as you're scoring goals, we're sorted. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But,
does that school still exist?
Well, it doesn't exist anymore, but I believe those kind of schools, they exist.
What, the scam ones or the real ones?
No, the scam ones, the real ones, I mean, they're regulated by SAFA, I think, and probably Jomo is involved, but I know they're regulated by SAFA.
Shit, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you ended up not being Teko Bodise?
Yeah.
I'm trying to hear it.
So... that Teko Mdise dream falls, you know, on the drain. Now, to basically being like a real unemployed dude, continue staying with grandma because, you know, grandma will take in any loser in life, give you love and show you care.
That's a t-shirt, bro.
You know, and yeah, grandma gives you that plate every night. So you kind of figure, look, something needs to happen, you know. And then a family member who worked as a security guard at one of the museums in Soweto was like, dude, there's an opportunity here. As a security guard, all these tourists that come here always ask me, where should we go after here? You know, we've been to the Nelson Mandela House. We are here now. Where do locals hang out? Where do people drink beer? What do they eat? You know what I mean? That was back in 2015. And then those family members put an idea together. Let's have a company and employ Mpumi. It's very won't be expensive, but it's very creative. So just bring him on board. And then basically that's how this whole thing started. That's because of the way that I do things. They didn't understand my creativity, basically. So we're like, you know what, instead of
carrying... Oh, I know that pain, bro. I know that pain.
Yeah. You know, so yeah. So I just decided to do my own thing.
How it started was this. So the security guard basically said, do this. And then when people came to him and said, we need a tour, he would call you and you would just sort of just go and show the people around. At this stage, there wasn't you weren't doing bicycles. You were just giving, like, what? How were you taking them around?
We're doing bicycles. So what I did, because the security guard is my like an older brother, a very close cousin to me, so he's like my older brother. So he told me and my brother-in-law, look, dude. So my brother-in-law very educated guy, works at one of these petrol stations, you know, and you're like, oh no, you have money, so how about you start this and then employ this one, right? And then this one will oversee everything. So yeah, you know, buy bikes, and let's get the show on the road. And then yeah, that's how it started. And then they got one of the guys that was already doing tours, but he wasn't as successful. So they put him also on board. Like, okay, you're going to be the tour guide. Mpumi, you'll report to Mpumi, but you'll be the tour guide. So that's how it started. And I didn't like the whole reporting to me thing because I felt like that's too much responsibility. I wanted to be guy, you know, that takes the people that know nothing about nothing. So basically, that's how it started. Because I was out on board to, you know, come up with ideas to basically draw the crowd to the business. So that's when everything else didn't go according to plan.
Okay. And then, so then you started your own thing.
Then I was like,
the mystery to me is how the books got into this story, because that's the crazy bit.
Yeah. So with regarding books, so it was 2015. Yeah, 2015, 2016, when Fees Must Fall was like hottest topic. And I remember, yeah, one of my friends who's a photographer, Neto, he was taking pictures at the marches and at the protests, right? But I was reading about it because, I mean, I have a friend, you know, who's deep in there taking pictures. So I was reading about this whole movement on why it started and what the whole deal about. So I realized what it was about. So I was like, hey, cool, this is, you know, it's something. Obviously, because I wasn't a student and I wasn't planning on being one, I was like, you know, it's all good. Let them do what they do. Then as I continued reading about it, I saw some articles saying that the youth is using this movement to be disruptive, you know, to be lazy, to not write exams, to, you know, try and loot stuff in Fontaine and whatnot. So I was like, yeah, that's very interesting, because from what I see from the guy taking pictures, it's none of what I'm reading, you know. So me being me, I'm like, okay, cool. How do I then use you know, this movement? Well, how do I support it more than using it? How do I support this movement from where I am as a person who's not a student? Mm-hmm. How do I support the movement? Because at the end of the day, we're all fighting for access to education. And I come from a community where, you know, we have so many community libraries, but they lack books. So I was like, yo, I know there's a lot of people that have books that are not using, that are collecting dust. How about we take those books and, you know, donate them to community libraries? And so when I decided to go on my own, it was ringing in my head to say, how do we get these books? How do we get these books? I then decided, look, bicycle tours are way pricey, right? For us as South Africans here in general, right? Way too pricey. I'm not going to pay only 600 to get on a
bike. How much does it cost to do a tour? A bicycle tour? 600 rand, 700 rand.
Yeah, when things are back normal, it's that 700 is like your...
Per person?
Yeah, per person, yeah.
What?
Exactly, you know.
Crazy.
Exactly.
Crazy.
So that's like, yeah, that's like your ballpark around 7. So I was like, how do I then, you know, stand out? How do I offer me as Mpumi, who will not be paying 700 anyone to be get on a bike? How do I bring Mpumi to the business? You know, so I was like, look, Mpumi has books collecting dust at home. How about you offer a discount?
Mm.
You know, for a discount, Mpumi donates books when it comes to book your tour in Soweto. So that sounded very well in my head, and I was like, let me do it, you know. And then when I started, obviously, I didn't start like 700. I think we're like 400, and then if you donate a book, I give you like 200 discounts, kind of a thing. And then I collected all those books. Now, I was sitting with a shitload of books at home, and I was like, yo, okay, this was a good idea, but now it doesn't make sense. What do I do with these books? Because people donated so many different books that I can't take them to like a primary school, but they're not appropriate for a primary school. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's like adult books. Some were university books as well. So I was like, yeah, no, let me find a way. And then I started just asking around people, community libraries, to say, yo, what's, you know, do you need books? You know, what's your shelf like? You know, and then always find out that there's so many people that are looking for all sorts of books, you know, and also my belief has always been that, you know, if you read a book, right, it changes your life one way or the other. So how about you pass on that book to someone else? Maybe give them a chance to also have their life changed by the same book that changed your life, you know? And yeah, basically I stuck to that and kind of grew out of control, really.
So what I like about you is you finding problems, creating opportunities out of them. How did you solve this book problem? I didn't understand how you've now found how did you end up building something that would find a home for the books? And you weren't just dumping them on a primary school doorstep, that you were actually finding homes for them. How did you solve that?
That's the fun part, well, at least for me. So I decided that, look, so many people always, you know, are on, Mpumi, man, why can we ride bikes with you? We don't want to do a tour, but we just want to ride, right? So I was like, okay, you know what? If you're going to ride my bikes for free, at least help me take these books to, you know, people that need these books and people that will use these books. And that's when I created. Yeah, that's when I created a ride called For the Libraries. And I was like, look, I have so many books. There's so many community libraries around Soweto or outside Soweto that need these books. So if you want to come and ride with me and help me get these books and go donate them to these community libraries, that's how then that problem got solved. Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got like basically a gang of free bicycle runners who are delivering all your books to the libraries. Okay, this question might not have a pretty answer. How many libraries are in Soweto, and how busy are they, is my question. Are libraries a thing?
In Soweto, I focus on community libraries. So these are just libraries out of a shipping container or someone's backyard, really. So those, I can't really say how many they are, because what I found is that on each and every township in Soweto, and remember, Soweto has just over 28 townships altogether, right? So these community libraries are almost on each and every township. So they are not that busy. They are busy with the small kids. Right. So those kids, they go there to, you know, ask for scissors and glue to make their projects. There's a stack of magazines that they can cut off and paste for their projects and stuff like that. So those libraries, those are the libraries that then we fortunate enough to say, okay, cool. Look, we'll bring these kids' books and also just give like vouchers, because now it's grown to people donating vouchers. Right. So now I'm like, okay, I'll give you books. I'll give you books, but I'll also give you vouchers, and then you guys can go and get like specific things that you need. Right. Books can be there for kids to read if they're done with their projects or however that you guys have a program. And then we'll give you this voucher, and then you can go and get specific resources or tools that you guys specifically need for certain areas. And then that's how then that started. And then obviously us coming on bikes also creates some sort of like hype for the library. And after we do that, the library becomes even more active, because community is like, oh, we saw, man, there were white people on bicycles that came to you. There were so many bikes, blah, blah, blah. So for me, I look at that, I'm like, if that's an activation to get people to use the library, then fuck it, let's do that. You know? Hmm. Yeah.
The story is completely bananas. I mean, I love it. Yeah. I mean, if you could deliver, if you could figure a way to deliver Wi-Fi to these in the same way, you'd change the whole world. You know?
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Bicycles with Wi-Fi routers on them or something, you know?
Sorted. We're solving all obesity. We're solving everything in one, man.
Amazing. You know?
Yeah. So that's how then that problem got solved. But it's evolving almost every year, man. It's crazy. We've even hosted reading competitions at the same community libraries. So we'll go back and have people sponsor prizes. One lady sponsored food. And then we hosted this whole reading competition at one of the libraries, and kids came to read the books because now there are books. You know, now you have no excuse of why you're not reading. So now there are books. We give them like 2 months to prepare. And then they go to the library almost every night, read up on the books. Then we come after 2 months, we host a reading competition. Kids get to, you know, read out loud, test their skills. Some laugh at each other, but I believe that's how peers inspire each other. And another day, you know, you got kids from the community, you know, reading. You know what I mean?
I mean, are you documenting any? Is it a video? Are you making a little film here? There's got to be a lot of amazing content that you'd be able to create from what you're doing there.
Yeah, so I try to keep to document as much as I can. But I do have like videos of us arriving at community libraries. You know, the thank you messages also from the people that run the community libraries as well. Mm. And yeah, man. So I try to capture those moments. Also, I'm not trying to make it look fake as well. So, you know, lately, you have people saying, yeah, if you're doing good, leave your phones at home, blah, blah, blah. But I do try to document what I can. And then we just keep it moving and make the impact that we're doing.
Okay, let's take a sidestep from books to bikes. Other than tourists, what is the cycling culture like in Soweto? Is there one?
There is one. It has grown over these past few years. It has grown crazy. So you got kids in these pimped out BMXs. So these kids, they buy these small BMXs, they pimp them out with all sorts of things. So that I feel like these kids have created their own cycling culture, you know, and it's untapped, which is fine. It's as raw as it gets. You know, you got kids.
What are they doing, stunts and stuff, or is it for riding? I mean, you know,
it's for riding, but they do donuts. They can spin their bikes.
Kusheshe on bike, BMX kusheshe.
Exactly. Exactly. Like as a proper kusheshe on a bike, man. So yeah, the cycling culture in Soweto, it has grown. So that's why it's easier also to host rides. There's other cycling clubs that host different rides. I mean, there's we have also academies, you know, that are grooming all these young kids to become professional cyclists. With me, I'm not it's not my thing. I don't want to race bicycles for a living or whatever. But I am building a platform whereby, you know, I can give these kids the right information. Because I feel like so much into cycling, besides racing bicycles, there's the mechanics. You know, there's the principals, there's the directors, there's this and that. So I'm trying to create a platform whereby, you know, we can get kids to come through and know that there's more than just, you know, racing these bikes. You know, you can do so much in and around that. And I think mechanics one is a big one because, you know, you earn a good living from it.
Yeah, I think with biking, there's so many things to obsess about, obviously. Yeah. I guess, you know, what was also on that Facebook post that I found, what was interesting was, you know, what you're doing in the book space is amazing. The tourist thing is cool, but then you seem to be dreaming up some sort of future of, you know, Sowetan cycling culture, or what a cycle shop might look like, or a bike shop. And that was very interesting. Like, I just thought this dude is crazy in a good way.
No. So that's So now that's the dream, to have a proper bike store in Soweto. I have so many great people that are, you know, working with me to make this a reality. We already started selling bikes online, and you know, we got a order from Zola, this once, and Zola is known, you know, for being the most gangsterest township in Soweto.
Wow.
So I mean, I'm gangster, but not like people from Zola,
not Zola.
You know. So, yeah. So when we got that order, for me, that I think that was a moment to say, look, you know, as much as anyone can charge us, however they want to charge us, but you know, is a market for cycling in Soweto. Because also, I mean, I interact with a lot of cyclists who want to race bicycles, who are my age and still have the dream to race bikes. So when they service their bikes outside of Soweto, you know? So I'm like, if we can have, yeah, man, look, it's a business. Also, it solves a problem. So now you don't have to spend more than you should. Now you're spending on transport to take your bike there, blah, blah, blah. So now you can just, you know, push your bike all to my shop. We service the bike, you take it home, you know.
And obviously, this is probably a ridiculous question that is, I don't know, probably cost millions. What about, Soweto or a Bukibona bike, you know, brand, a bike brand of actual bikes or bike parts or frames or something? Is that, yeah. Is that something feasible?
Yeah, no, interesting enough, today I got an email from someone that says, you know, they manufacture bikes, they work with the guys in China, blah, 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 and, you know, they'll love to pose an idea of a Kiponi branded bicycle. I was like, that's pretty dope, you know. I mean, guys that I work with, the guys that help me sell my bikes, They also have, you know, the power to do that, you know. So it's something in the pipelines. Obviously, you're trying to look for, you know, something that will make business sense. At the same time, you know, lift the community around. So if the long-term goal is to have a bicycle manufacturer in Soweto, you know, where we can make our own bikes. Yeah, I mean.
You're not scared, dude. You're
sitting.
I love it.
Nah. I mean, you know, those days for me are gone, man. So for now, yes, we'll sell and resell bikes. Make sure we keep the culture of cycling alive in Soweto until we reach that point where we can make our own bikes. You know, I mean, I think guys from Kubega, I mean, they're doing amazing work with bikes in Cape Town and just the whole program that they have going. So that's what, you know, that will be something to do in Soweto, and you know, just a little bit better than what they're doing, you know what I mean? yeah, because I mean, I do work with them, I have a good relationship with them, because I feel like, you know, with certain things, it's nice to do a phone and put it in the market, and because everyone is consuming it, you then think, yeah, that's it, you know, this is the ceiling for me because everyone is buying it. But at the same time, you have people that are using your product that they complain every single time, you know, and when you look at what they're complaining about, it's something that can be upgraded so that they don't complain, you know. So for us as Bukibona, that's what we're looking at, to say, look, here's this beautiful program. I mean, even the government tried to copy what Omega is doing, and they called me in to come assist, and it was, I mean, it was cool, but it's still they doing exactly what the other people are doing, which, you know, doesn't help anyone when it comes to cycling. Yeah, so I mean, I got my own ideas, step by step. Eventually, we'll get.
I doubt it.
Yeah, no. I got shitload of ideas, so yeah.
How have you handled, I mean, with the tourism industry basically dead thanks to this pandemic, how have you survived and had, I mean, your industry must be dead at the moment, so how are you functioning, or are you functioning?
So last year when we got hit by this COVID thing, I think we had 44 international bookings cancelled at one point. Like, you know, obviously
your business is so young. Well, what, 2015, 2016. So you just still getting on your feet, really.
And I think that was it. The year before last, it was most profitable we've seen the business. You know, I think listed on two international platforms for travelers. So that was insane. You know, then anyway, COVID came, canceled tours, business literally died. And then I was chilling at home, looking at all these tech guys, because, you know, tech guys are the big thing right now. You know, they're coming up with this app, they're doing this, they're doing that. And I was thinking, you know, tourism, there's no way, you know, we can do or compete with these guys right now. So I just decided, look, we open a bicycle delivery service, basically, and we'll also be part of the essential workers. And because I always think on the creative side of things, like, look, we've had a lot of stories of how these big courier companies, one, get lost in the hood because they don't know the addresses. Two, they are scared of the hood. So how about we take those parcels and take them around the hood and then they just pay us? And then the Bookie Bonnie delivery service was born. We took care of the parcels, save time, get paid. It's the hood. We know it better than anyone. So we just shortcut, parcel delivered. So we try to, you know, partner with all those big companies. And
I wish I knew. I've been lost in Soweto way too many times. The addresses don't make sense, and their houses are not where they're supposed to be.
Exactly, right? The numbers, like, the other way around and whatnot. So for me, that was the opportunity. I was like, look,
brilliant.
We have bicycles. You know, we have bicycles already, and tourism is not going to make us money. Let's use the bicycles to deliver things. I've always had that idea. It's just that I didn't do it because tourism was keeping me so busy. So I didn't have, you know, that motivation to do the bicycle courier services. But with COVID, I think 3 months on the line with COVID, we established that whole business. The boys, some branded jackets, some guy, just the delivery bags, and we were rolling. Well, we still are. We're coming back end of Feb. We're starting again to deliver end of Feb. So yeah. So even with tourism dying, I was able to make a plan and have the bicycle courier services that kept us alive.
And how are you handling? What about the book side? Is that part drying up, or how are you managing to still deliver books and stuff?
I have boxes of books that I need to
there's no shortage of books for delivery then.
No.
You're gonna be delivering books for a long, long time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even partnering with these publisher companies as well, because they have people that are writing books and stuff like that. And so what I did is I stayed away from delivering food. And I can deliver everything else, just not food. Because food has a very complex process. Getting it from the kitchen to the customer is a very delicate process. And I mean, we have the bikes and the right bags, but for whatever reason, we're not confident.
The time, a pizza's not going to be hot if it takes you 45 minutes to get somewhere.
You know what I mean? So we just stayed away from food from the get-go.
Very smart thing to do, man. Very smart.
I mean, you don't want to throw yourself in a deep end like that. You know, all of a sudden, like, Bookie Bonnie is great, but when it comes to delivering their shit, the pizza came and one slice was like that. Like, nah, man, it's not worth it.
Cool. Well, that's amazing. So, what is it that? What do you need? Like, what is the thing? What kind of support does Bookie Bonnie need, or not, are you guys just totally rock and roll?
No. if it requires us cycling, then we'll rock and roll all day, every day. But right now, I mean, I'm trying to get like a shipping container that I can convert into a shop. So I think right now that's the big problem. I mean, we reached out to everyone that we work with and everyone that supports us to say, look, this won't really be a bike store. You know, there'll be everything that Bookie Pony is. It can be a mini library, can be a tourism info center. And we're based in Vilakazi Street. So, I mean, you know, you'll get advertising.
Well, how much does a shipping container cost?
The quote that we have is about 35 grand for a 12 meter.
How much? 35?
Yeah, 35 grand.
35 grand?
Yep.
For
this is not brand new.
Box.
You know what I mean? There's still transportation in that and the vet. I've seen quite a lot of companies that, you know, use shipping containers for all sorts of creative ways. But those ways, I guess they're not sustainable, so the container ends up dumped in some place. So I'm kind of reaching out to those people to say, look, let's just, you can give us the container, we'll bring it to life, you know, then we'll sell bicycles and do everything for the community, basically. So right now, that's the big challenge. But I believe after that, everything else should run smooth because we know where to get bikes. We've built relationships with the biggest bicycle distributor in South Africa. So, you know, those guys, they really back me. So if we can just get that physical thing going, then everything else should run according to plan, basically.
How many guys work with you and for you and around you? How big is the team?
Not very big.
Am I looking at it? Am I looking at the whole team?
You're looking at most part of the team. So it's me, the wife-to-be, obviously. I mean, everything runs past her. And then you got the boys then. The boys, I got one expect tour guide. I got a guy called Machini. Machini means machine. The cycle's like a crazy dude. So I got him. He got his squad. I think there's four of them in the squad. And yeah, basically that's it. So because I've paid my dues, I've been on a bike for most part of this journey. So I do most of behind the scenes.
You don't cycle anymore. You don't. Yeah, we won't find you making deliveries.
I do. I select which ones I do. That's because we need to get more people to deliver through us. So that's my hardest job that I do, convincing everyone that we can actually deliver this using a bicycle and it will cost you less, but it'll get on time, blah, blah, blah. So I do that part. And then yeah. But I do most of my tours because the international tourists, when you book, they want you to do the tour. They don't want your friend or talker to do the tour.
So when you book a tour with one, you can actually choose who your host is.
So for example, with Airbnb, they have this platform, Airbnb Experiences, where whoever is hosting the experience must host it in real life, not only on. So when they get there, they expect to see this face and not someone else.
Okay, cool. A weird question. I'm just trying to think of how maybe people seeing this could help you. For your container, what is it? Are you looking for a business partner? Are you looking for donations? Are you looking for an investment? Are you looking for a loan? How does someone help? If someone was watching this and wanted to help you, how would they do it?
I think at the moment, we're looking for a donation of a shipping container. I think
a what?
A donation for a shipping container. Yeah. So if anyone has a shipping container sitting somewhere there doing nothing, if they can donate it to us, transport it to Vilakazi Street where we are, then everything we'll take care of everything else. Because in the team we do have a guy that works. He's an engineer, so he does all these designs with steel and stuff. right? So he pretty much can design a container, and then we can get it to work. He designed my bicycle billboard thing. So I have another business where I advertise using bicycles. We call it Ads in Motion. So basically, we have this custom built billboard that we attach to the bike, and then we pull it with the bike. So he designed that nice structure. So cool. if we get a shipping container, that's our guy that can design whole thing. And then obviously with business, we use creativity and relationships. So everything else, like I said, I think should be able to, you know, to just fit in. Because for now, we can't afford a shipping container. That's why we, you know, we will help if someone wants to donate a shipping container. And then everything else we do have in place.
Tell me this. Sorry, I'm actually just making a note because I've got an idea for you. Hold on. What is the this is going to sound like such a fucking touristy question, and I hate it. what is the secret to Soweto? What how do you understand the culture? It's so different from everywhere else. Like, what is the you're from there, you're born and you're bred there, you know it like the back of your hand. What is the secret? What do you need to know to understand that amazing place?
I think first and foremost, you're right by saying that's a tourist.
Sorry,
that's a touristy question.
Well, I'm intrigued because I'm there often. I'm actually I'm currently working with the Ayetu guys about the new development Ayetu. I'm helping them. We're trying to turn part of it into a hub for content and music and stuff. So also, I've done projects there, and Sipo Hotsticks lives there, and I've visited him. And, but you know, I'm a tourist there completely. But I always wish I could just stay there a night and figure out what the fuck this place is about, because it's cool.
No, man, I think. This is my tour guide in me speaking, right?
I don't want the tour guide. Put that one away.
All right, I think come to whenever you come to Soweto, just, you know, everything that you've heard of Soweto, think of it the opposite. Everything that you've heard of Soweto, just think about it the opposite. Good or bad, think about it the opposite, and just see how that works out.
I don't understand what that means.
So we have a lot of people that come, right, with their own views. You've read something somewhere, you've heard this about Soweto, but then when we get there, first and foremost, you probably get, first time you get to Soweto, you get to Villa Gaza Street, right? It's beautiful. Everyone is free, walking around, like, you know, in a backyard. And you must then take that and understand that Soweto is more than that street, right? Mm. And it's the opposite of that street. So whenever you go, let's say, to Dlamini, for instance, right? It is nothing. It looks nothing like that street. But what is the same throughout Soweto is the ubuntu of everyone. It's the humanity of everyone. So everyone is welcoming. Sometimes I feel like we're too welcoming, you know, but all of us are welcoming. I mean, we've taken tours in townships where people didn't think that it was possible for people to be cycling with white people. You know, they believe that, people were seen here, they'll take the bikes, they take this, but then, you know, you get there, people are just welcoming. I mean, we've had a point where we've cycled with visitors in these so-called North Cove areas of Soweto, and people just were so welcoming that we ended up getting drunk and pushing our bikes back to Villa the street. You know what I mean? So if for me, I would say, just come with that open mind to say, look, yes, I've heard, yes, I know. Just try to think of it opposite. Say, okay, cool. The street is one place, right? I mean, I think it's one of, if not the only street with cameras in Soweto. There's no other street with cameras, you know. Everyone else is using their community security. Say, if anything happens and you shout, Vimba, if someone is running away, that's the, I think it's the township in South Africa. It's a township code. Say something is wrong, get that person, and you know, you sorted. Whatever that was taken from you will be returned. So I think for me, okay, that's
the I do feel that was the touristy answer. I wasn't, you don't need to alleviate me from fear of crime and wada and sell me on Ubuntu. Seriously, that's not the question. Is what makes Soweto tick, man? What is the heartbeat?
It's the people.
Yeah,
it's the people. I mean, look, we claim to be the best. We claim to be the trendsetters. So if you come and say you are a dancer, for instance, right, and you claim to have a dance move is better than, you can do it better than anyone in the world. So wait, so we won't accept that, right? We will take and welcome your dance. We'll put the Soweto spice and sort it.
I like that. I like that one. So very competitive and proud.
Big time.
Right. Cool.
We like the Zulu nation. You know how Zulus are. They're very proud of their culture.
Yes, it's their biggest ally and their biggest downfall.
And right. Yeah. Anytime, you know, I always tell people that where you go in South Africa, if you don't understand Venek or whatever, if you ask even me, because I'm Xhosa, if you ask me, but teach me South African language, answer that, I'll teach you Zulu, even though I'm not Zulu.
I was about to say, how many Xhosa guys are living in Soweto? Can't be a lot, or is there?
No, we've taken over.
Oh, you are. I didn't know that.
No. We've taken over. There's quite a number of us. But you see, with Soweto, Orlando, that's where you wanna be if you are in Soweto. Yeah. So Orlando, well, it's divided into two. So you have your Orlando West, which is where Villa the streets and everything else is, and then you have Orlando East, right? Orlando East has the most trendiest places and the most trashiest places. So when those two environments come together, that's the definition of Soweto.
Huh.
Yeah. Wonderful. You got the best football players. They come from Orlando. You got the best musicians. They come from Orlando. Like anything you can think of, I'm sure in Orlando we can find. I mean, politicians from Orlando. You know, the community. A thing that used to go to hold their secret meetings or whatever, Orlando.
All right.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, last question, then I'll let you go. Tell me about, I'm interested in your parents. Are they also from Soweto or did you come from somewhere else originally?
From Transkei.
From Transkei.
Yeah, the parents.
I'm talking about the parents, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about your parents and what they're like.
Sure. Let me just switch this off. So, my mother, right? She's not a very strict, very chilled person. My father, on the other hand, was too chilled. My father was a football player. He played for one of the biggest teams in Soweto, but back in the day before the Orlando Pirates times or during the Orlando Pirates, because that was 1930 something. He played for a team called Brenzy, which was based in Dlamini.
So that's why you wanted to be a pro footballer. You came from football heritage, I see.
Yeah. So father was a football player, mother was a fanatic of football. You know, she loves football more than anything in this world. Remember, she even shouted at me once for saying that Steve Lecolier is not playing, so Orlando Pirates is going to lose. And she's just like, no, that's not how football works.
Awesome.
You know? Yeah, yeah. So,
you're from the Church of Football.
Yeah. Everything was football. So parents both Xhosa, so I'm not mixed or anything. My parents are Xhosa. My mother, she was never like a family orientated person. So she was never like one place. You know, she wanted to do all sorts of things. She wanted to be in politics, she wanted to be in that, she wanted to be in that. So she just moves around quite a lot. Reason why my grandmother, so at home, I call my grandmother mother, and then I call my mother by her name, basically.
Carry on. I'm too embarrassed to ask that question. Carry on.
No, what question is that?
No, I can't. I can't do it. Carry on.
All right. So anyway. So that's why I got raised by my grandmother. But parents, men, and children, and my father passed away in 1998. Because my grandmother was like mother and father to me, so it was never like a thing of pops passed away, oh, who's gonna do this for me, who's gonna do that. I feel like he did enough for me. I mean, he taught me how to play football, so I feel like, you know, I'm good, because every school that I went to, because I went to about 8 different schools in my life, every school that I went to, I took player of the year in football. Like, it was not debated, it was just give it to this guy. This guy's the player of the year.
So you are a great footballer, actually, but it's massively competitive. So,
yeah. So it's that thing that, you know, football is competitive, and I mean, with corruption, it's weird places you find corruption these days. It's crazy.
Well, football seems like the first place I'd look, just for the record.
Well, I had to experience it firsthand, so
right.
I mean, parents are cool, man. Mother is the type of person that, you know, finished school. Grandmother is see your dreams, basically that's
still that's around.
She's still around.
You close?
Yeah, oh, very tight. Mm. Very tight. Let me just explain, right? Biological mother. I have biological mother, and then I have mother, right? Me and mother, super tight. Biological mother, not so much. Because biological mother, she's not, I don't know, she's not a, I don't know if she doesn't like children, if I may put it that way. So we're not super tight. It's a whole thing of her bloodline kind of thing. The woman from where she comes from, not very motherly.
Very strict woman, was a woman from the trans sky, doesn't show emotions, and right. And you said the other mother you're talking about is your gran.
Yeah.
And that's one who's mothered you and raised you.
Yeah, that's the one that raised me. That's the one that took me everywhere in the world. That's who I call mom. If I don't call mom, probably help me or something.
So somebody gives you $1 million tomorrow, who do you call first?
Grandma, mom.
And how many calls until you call your biological mom? Who's in between?
Probably. Probably send a message, say, yo, dude, this is happening.
You wouldn't even call her, you just send her a text.
No, we're not that tight, yeah. And besides, I think my grandmother. So I have eight grandmothers, by the way. That's, you know, very much active in my life. So they never wanted us to feel, us being the young children of the family, feel as though, oh, Mbumi's mother is not around, or this one's mother, you know. Or if someone buys one of the child a toy, my grandma will make sure that, okay, cool, I see that toy. Let me go get another toy so that, you know, it looks like our toys, you know. Yes. So that, yeah, it's no one's toy. We grew up with that thing that nothing was mine, it was ours.
Mm.
You know, so yeah.
Well, I definitely see that ethic in the work that you're doing, and all your mothers must be super proud of what you are doing, Pumalelo. And really, an honor to meet you, man. And I know this is so random. Like I said, I've never just done this before. I don't know, you know, your marketing degree came in handy because it was a short thing you wrote there, but it just made me immediately reach out and say, please come and chat.
Yeah,
glad you did, and lovely to meet you.
No, next time I'm
up there, you'll have to show me. Right. I'm actually, weirdly, because I'm not coming up now. I'm doing a shoot with the Kaizer Chiefs on Monday in Soweto, but I'm not coming up for it because of some COVID stuff. So I'm having to direct it. My crew's there. I'm having to direct it remotely, but I'm coming up the following week.
I saw something that you said about, you know, doing things from where you are, but controlling the world. So I was like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's very weird directing from this room to Soweto, a whole, whole crew of people. It's very, very odd thing. But I just want to say thanks for your time, man. And I just hope someone who's watching this decides that they've got a container in their garden that they just need to get rid of, and that gets to you. And if not, I have this other little plan that I'm going to try and enact to help you.
Thank you, man.
Keep on doing what you're doing. I would love to actually do this again in a year. I'd love to do one with you every year and follow what you're doing, because I love that you're zagging, you're on your own path. And that's really hard. It's hard to be doing what you're doing because, you know, the disruptive thinkers upset a lot of people along the road, yeah. You know, especially, yeah. You know, people don't like people thinking of new things and changing how the game works. And you're definitely someone who's obviously in trouble a lot and has people looking at you squiff to try and figure out what your problem is.
Yeah.
So I can only give you strength and luck, and identify strongly with what you're doing. And I think it's amazing. And I love how you think about it, and how you're doing amazing stuff and building a business, which is actually, maybe that's what I really related to most. A lot of my work is specifically about trying to do things that are going to impact people's lives, but and also make them commercially viable, because the government ain't going to help and no one's going to give you handouts. If you can make this, marry those two things, you got something amazing.
Big time. And thank you, man. You know, when, excuse me, when you said you'd interview this, I'm like, are you kidding me? Obviously, I've told, you know, the wives to be, I'm like, dude, look at this. You know who this is? Obviously, I mean, friends with Kat, so followed her for a long time. So,
Being that was ever put on this earth, bro. I don't know how.
You know what I mean? So I was like,
you know Kath?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, but just so you know, I didn't know that there was any connection. This was I don't even know that she knows that I'm talking to you. I just looked at your Facebook post and went, I want to meet this guy.
And I was thinking, I mean, I remember you guys had a radio, online radio happening.
You run the eye.
Yeah. So I was like, yo, man. But no, man, thank you. And I mean, like you said, it's kind of very awkward industry where, you know, people look at you weird, like, you ride bicycles? Oh, okay. You know what I mean? I always say that, you know, my community, anyone that rides a bicycle is not respected. You know what I mean? Let alone the girls. So thank God I'm not in that environment where, you know, I need to pull up with the VRPA and whatnot, you know.
You really made it, where I really understood was where you started working with the guys who were doing the tour stuff, and then you said it very flippantly, but I knew there was a lot more to the story when you said they didn't get your idea, so you just started your own thing. Now that's a big thing. That's a really major thing, to start your own thing, to kind of prove people wrong and to put your idea at the forefront at your own risk. And then immediately you have people that have looked after you who are resentful that you're doing this thing. Now your business is successful. it creates other issues.
I sometimes sit and look at, you know, how far this whole journey has taken me, you know, to what boardrooms and stuff like that. And I'm like, dude, and this over someone just not believing that this idea can work. And the call it the prototype of the idea, you know, brought in the Department of Women. You know, no one, during that time, I didn't know that there was a Department of Women. The people around me didn't know. Even the first time I heard about it. You know what I mean? Department of Women was like, oh, Bumi, you're doing a female ride thing. Can we come and support? And then there was a Minister of Women. And we're all like, oh, okay, wow. You know, then looking back, it's like, even with that, someone who doesn't believe that we can do amazing things with this damn thing, then, you know what, it's all good. Let me go try it on my own, so that if I fail, I'm on my own. If I succeed, I'm on my own. Then, you know, no one will look at me and be like, ah, you see that guy? I gave him 5 bikes. Don't see him now, you know. He started with money.
Cool, man. Dude, cheers to you. Good luck with Bookie Warner. Let's stay in touch, man. I'd love to just track what you're doing from a background. When I'm next there, I'll hit you up. And if there's anything I can do to help, you just give me a shout.
No problem. I'll let you know. I'll keep you updated as well as to, you know, what's happening and stuff like that. I'm a true believer that, you know, things come plan. So if things do fall, or when things fall into plan, I'll definitely keep you in the loop on what's happening and stuff.
If you're listening to this, just find them on social media or on a website. I'm sure it's easy to Google you guys. There can't be too many Bookie Bonies out there.
Yeah, just Bookie Bony everywhere. We'll appear somehow.
Cool. Pulela, take care, bro. And
thank you.
Just good luck, man.
Thank you so much, brother.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to johnsavage.com/whatsyourpoison. Or if you're on the Apple Store, please give a rating or a 5-star or a comment or anything you want. And if you're on Spotify, please do the same. It's very helpful to me and it's kind. I do these things for free for you, and I'm not trying to make you feel guilty, but the least you can freaking do is just give me a rating or a comment on freaking one of those platforms. Jesus.